a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. You may have heard or read drug abuse and addiction facts citing a $559 billion per year cost to the U.S., or that illicit drug use alone accounts for $181 billion in health care, productivity loss, crime, incarceration, and drug enforcement costs. The drug offenders account for more than one-third of the growth in state prison populations and more than 80% of the increases in the number of prison inmates since 1985. But hearing those statistics often make it easier to tell ourselves it'll never happen to me or my family because we're not those people. My guests today will be talking about what is needed, indeed happening in our communities, with our families, and how they are getting involved. My guests for the first half hour today are Donna Kelly, founder, director of the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation and Kayla's mother. Leo Castillo, who is co-director of the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation and military representative. Officer Ty Lewis, police officer of the Paso Robles Police Department. And in the second half of our show today, we'll be talking with Field Gibson, who is the president of the Paso Robles School Board, and Anna Murray, clinic manager for Aegis Treatment Center. Today's show is live, and we invite you to also join our conversation with your comments and your questions. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, 781-3875, and I want to welcome all of you to be here today.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
So, Donna, I'm going to start with you. The indication from the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation is that, and the fact that Kayla's your daughter, is that this was started for Kayla.
Yes. Actually, we started this now about 3.5 years ago, I believe. We lost our daughter 4 years ago to a combination of alcohol and morphine pills that she was given at a party. My daughter was 24 years old at the time. She grew up her whole life in Templeton and was a Templeton grad, as well as attending and almost graduating Fresno State at the time. It happens to every family, unfortunately, somewhere along the line, someone's affected by this. But once that happened, you know, obviously that was very devastating for myself, family, friends. And all of a sudden, all these other people kind of start coming out of the woodwork that you never hear about that have lost their lives as well to substance abuse. So kind of our first goal was we can't really make any kind of a difference before we start bringing awareness that this is even happening, that people even know about all of these young lives that we're losing. And so kind of we started very small with garage sale, bake sale, to create these large banners that we created with local photos, ages, and names of, you know, some of our local youth that have died that would not be what you typically would think of as an addict. They became very impactful. People would see them, the faces, saying, you know, I coached that kid. What happened to them? Or, you know, I taught that kid in class. I had no idea that they had passed because they don't make the news. They don't make the newspaper. Most people don't hear about how many we actually are losing on a constant basis. Unfortunately, we just had two recent in the North County within a four-day period. So we created these banners, which became very impactful, then turned them into resource cards and information on the back of that. And since it's kind of just really blossomed into a huge thing, and hopefully my goal is to save our next generation by bringing new education programs into our younger kids, starting them off before they're trying and experimenting. And that's how we've kind of partnered with a lot of organizations and stuff to get this going.
Would you have ever thought that you would be in this situation at this time, that, you know, what your life's work would be at this point would be to work on a foundation like this? I mean, did you suspect from Kayla's interactions or who Kayla was that this would ever be something that you would come across?
No, not at all. We were the typical family. You know, my kids had it all as it goes. Yeah, you know, they did things in our mind. We all did things growing up and stuff. And you kind of felt like, just like us, it would be all, you know, normal and fine in the end. Things have changed a lot since we were growing up and stuff. So I think that's contributed to it. But never did I imagine that it would have been my child. I saw a lot of stuff for many years trying to get help and stuff. But in your mind, you still never thought that this was going to be the ultimate cost of what was going on.
You thought she'd kind of outgrow her rebellion.
I don't even know. I knew at some point that it wasn't a rebellion. It was, you know, it's an illness. Mm-hmm. She was sick and she could not help what was going on. And part of the problem is we don't have a lot of resources around here, especially, mm-hmm. you know, several years ago. But we don't have resources. We don't have any place that a parent can get help and have some kind of comfort in finding something. I mean, we get calls all the time from parents and adults looking for help for their sibling or whatever it be, because you don't even know where to start as a parent. You don't even know where to begin to get help for your kid.
Did you know as a parent that Kayla was on a troubled path? Did you try to reach out and make phone calls? Is that how you discovered there was
nothing? I think when she was younger, you know, in high school and stuff like that, you know, I didn't really think of it as, you know, a troubled or it was something that at that point you kind of think, yeah, it's, you know, typical stuff when they get caught doing something or whatever, like most parents. But unfortunately, I think a lot of parents really need to realize that we need to look back into not only the history of our family, because addiction is very genetic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just a simple thing of going to the ER with a broken arm in a football game and getting some kind of an opioid or some kind of a drug that will take that child all the way down a long line to heroin. And so it's been extremely eye-opening to me to really learn about addiction and stuff. I had no idea, and I wish now I had more education on it.
Yeah. Leo, I'm going to go over to you. How did you get involved with Donna and in the Kayla Peach Foundation?
Well, about 3 years ago, I ran into Donna by Googling nonprofits in the San Luis Obispo County. At the time, I had PCS here with the Counter Drug Task Force from San Diego to San Luis Obispo. And our main goal and objective was to focus on nonprofits that were grassroots based and needed help with strategic planning. That's how I met Donna. I worked with her for the last 3 years. I'm no longer with the Counter Drug Task Force. I'm now stationed down in Vandenberg Air Force Base. But so I represent or support Donna in a civilian mindset now as co-director and military rep, I guess. And when I heard her story, it really it brought tears to my eyes, because I have three small children, and it makes me realize that this could potentially affect my youth and my home. And not to think that it could never affect me, you know, being a military man of 17 years and having, you know, a decent home and a good job and a good upbringing, thinking that that could never happen to us is just ignorance. So I wanted to be supportive, and I wanted to do what I could do to work with Donna and the goal that she has as far as bringing training and education to the community, especially in such a small environment, which, coming from San Diego, you know, we know that there's issues.
Yeah.
And it's a metropolis of a city. You see it every day. I think the problem or issue here in the county is that we don't want to see the issue here. We live in beautiful wine country. We have beautiful rolling hills, wonderful oak trees, the coast.
A lot of affluence in a lot of areas.
Right. So
other areas without affluence.
Right. So we're very fortunate to live where we live, but I feel that there's these dark spots in our county that we tend to ignore. And by ignoring them, then we run into problems of, you know, a lack of understanding and a lack of acceptance of what the issues really can be. Whether you think they could affect you or not, that's kind of what the mission is for the Kayla Peach Foundation.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Officer Lewis, I'm going to take a call from Jacqueline before I have you introduce you. Jacqueline, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
Thank you. Yes, I have a comment. I was listening to the mother, and my heart goes out to her, but I wanted to tell her that I was just like her daughter once upon a time. And my parents, God knows I put them through the same thing. I mean, the worry, I can just imagine. But they had support, and we had support. And I think that it makes a huge difference in the community to have a church. That was our network, and we had a program called Celebrate Recovery, and there is a 12-step program that it was biblically based, but I think that if it was not for the graciousness and the kindness and the love and the people that represented that church that helped us through that time, I don't know if I would, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. It was a sickness. Like she said, her mother was saying that was not just an age of rebellion. It was sickness where she needed support. They needed resources. And I thought I just might say that to remind people that there is always the church. There are always people out there who are willing to help that have been there. That even just having a coordinated network where people meet together and they study and they relate, that's where a lot of people should be going for help and for counsel. There's wisdom and a lot of counsel.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you for calling in, and congratulations on your recovering. Officer Lewis, Donna was talking a little bit about the fact that it was a shock to her in this community, and our community, and the rise of addiction to legal drugs, to prescribed medications or access to prescribed medications, and then the transition into heroin. Is that something that we're seeing a rise in Paso Robles, in San Luis, and in other areas in our towns?
Yes, it's very interesting. When I first started out as a police officer in 1996, I worked in the Valley, and I noticed then that heroin was a problem, but it was a different clientele, so to speak, that were addicted to heroin. And then we noticed a lot of people that were the Vietnam War era that had those types of addictions, methamphetamine, cocaine, marijuana. Those were the more prevalent drugs of choice. When I first moved to Paso Robles in 2002, I don't remember ever seeing heroin in the community in that early part of the 2000s. But what started happening was, and some of you may recall that, oxycodone, OxyContin became very, very popular, and there was a wave towards prescribed medications and diversion of those, whether it was there was millions, if not billions, of dollars invested in advertising. Pharmaceutical reps were convincing doctors that this was a miracle drug, and it was just flowing and prescribed very loosely. So a lot of our youth at the time, high school, junior high, began experimenting with it, and they became addicted. Then the crisis kind of mushroomed, and legislators, government got involved and forced some change in the pharmaceutical business, which ultimately changed the formula, made it more difficult to obtain. But yet we have this generation of young ones that were addicted to prescription medication. So when that changed, it dried up, and they had to find alternatives. And what rushed into that vacuum was heroin. And now we're living the tragedies within our communities that heroin has brought. It's certainly not the only drug that's a problem, but as we were talking before the program started, we can link dozens of deaths in this county alone per year to that. And I don't have hard numbers in front of me, we might be able to provide those to you. But it's certainly a problem that we're grappling with up in the North County and in Paso Robles in particular. And it's such a refreshing opportunity for us to be able to partner with such a grassroots organization to, hopefully effect some real change.
I'm going to If you are just joining us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station here for the Central Coast. My guests today are Donna Kelly, who is the founder and director of the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation and Kayla's mother, Leo Castillo, who is co-director of the foundation and military representative, Officer Ty Lewis, who's police officer with the Paso Robles Police Department. In our second half of the show, we'll be talking with Phil Gibson, who is the president of the Paso Robles School Board, and Anna Murray, who is the clinic manager for Aegis Treatment Center. Your voice is welcome on our show, and we are live. You can call in to make your comments or to ask your questions of our guests today. And our phone number is 805-781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875. Officer Lewis, Donna had mentioned that recently there were two deaths of young people from overdose, that there are a lot of deaths that are unnoticed, they're unannounced. How is that happening? How are those deaths occurring that it is so invisible, so opaque?
Well, I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of psychology to it. Maybe some of the other guests can elaborate a little bit. But part of it is, I think that initially what I've experienced anecdotally talking with parents that are going through such tragedies is not only is it tremendously painful to process initially, but I think there's some shame that is associated with it. And it's not like a car crash where a sudden occurrence happens and your life changes forever and that child was the most popular kid in school and everybody rallies around them. I think that drug addiction still, as is mental health to a degree also, is sort of a taboo topic to openly discuss because there are people that may have a difficult time relating to it. There is the shame associated with it. And so all of those things, I think, impact people's willingness to openly discuss an undercurrent, a problem that is kind of better left unsaid sometimes, or at least in their opinion, better off left
Donna,
unsaid.
Donna, I want to go to you on this because your response to Kayla's death was different. You didn't go under the covers with the fact that Kayla had an overdose, that the result of the overdose was the death. That was something that was a part of Kayla's memorial service. It was a part of everything that happened. Was that something that you struggled to make that decision, or did that seem like what was it for you that was a decision for you and other parents you think that you've talked to really have a hard time being
well,
open?
I think, Chris, part of that is probably, you know, my personality. Every parent's different. Everybody grieves in a different way.
Right.
There's a lot of parents that I know who have lost and hurt as bad as I do. But yet it's more difficult for them to get out there and be able to speak about it. I find that I can deal with it kind of more on a business basis, but when it comes personal, it makes it a lot more difficult. Mm-hmm. But I do want to reiterate, I mean, every family is different and stuff, and it was just something that I just felt that, you know, like when you go to the post office and you see these lost lives in our military and stuff and people didn't know about, I thought, you know, this is becoming the same kind of thing. I mean, people needed to become aware of these beautiful lives that we're losing. And the people that we have on our banners and our cards, the parents have agreed to this. It's not the way they want to necessarily have their child remembered, but it makes them still feel good that their child's being remembered. And in some small way, people seeing that, they're hoping that that's going to possibly save somebody else's child. And so it's been difficult for a lot of people. I don't want to say it hasn't been difficult for me by any
means.
No,
I'm sure not.
But I just – I kind of say this is my way, I guess, of keeping myself out of a straitjacket.
No, and different people do grieve in different ways, and right. some people get activated, and other people grieve in other
yes,
ways.
Absolutely.
True. We're going to take a call here from Deborah. Deborah, are you there, or Deborah?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi.
I have a concern, and I guess question, if your speakers would care to address this issue. I am concerned about the passage of Proposition 64, recreational marijuana, and I'm concerned about the impact that that will have on all sorts of people, those who don't even participate in recreational or use recreational marijuana, people on the roads, people in schools, learning capabilities, all sorts of potential, I have heard, mental illnesses that could be caused by, long-term, today's marijuana, long-term today's marijuana use. And any comments that your experts would like to give to that, I would appreciate it.
Okay, good question, Deborah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, maybe I can chime in a little bit on this.
And this is Officer Lewis speaking.
Yes. So I think the recreational legalization of marijuana is certainly going to have impacts that I don't think anybody is quite, aware of where that's going to go totally at this point. And even at the state level, California is still a couple years out from developing a comprehensive set of rules, laws, regulations governing the recreational use of marijuana. Locally, at least in Paso Robles, and Donna has been a big help to this process. One of the things that we're trying to do, and this is more focused on the medical use of marijuana, but there's a lot of overlap between the recreational and medical consumption, is we're really trying to take it on locally and get a really good viewpoint and a future image of what our community might look like based upon the legalization of marijuana and whatever facet you want to look at. It's certainly going to have some implications. I think one of the things that keeps coming up, and Donna can speak to this from her perspective as well, is that, most of these concerns do fall on public safety issues, whether it's for their children. How is this going to impact them? Is their attendance rates at school going to change? Are graduation rates going to change? The mental health aspects of it. I think that, looking at the polling data, at least in this area, it's very consistent with California, and in that it was close to 60%, I think, of the, at least countywide, that voted for Proposition 64 and the recreational use. But there's still, even with that, most everybody I talk to, whether you're pro or con on the use of marijuana, will all say that they really want to make sure that the youth within the community are protected and that there's good information so that they don't hopefully go down a path that is identifiable and preventable.
Okay. And Don, do you want to speak to this?
I totally agree. I mean, Prop 64 is something that it's happened. It's something right now we're going to have to learn to live with and do the best that we can in educating our parents, our youth, our communities in the potential of things that can happen from that and stuff. And like I said before, our main focus is hopefully changing our next generation and hoping that many of them don't have to turn to these kinds of things if not needed.
Leo?
I have the caveat off that as well. Our main focus with the Kale Peach Foundation is more about providing education, training, and awareness. Obviously, Proposition 64 has passed. It is becoming a thing. Now, how do we combat that? Mm-hmm. Do we fight them? Do we say, no, we're not going to have you come into our towns? Or is that going to be more of a problem? Mm-hmm. So rather than do that, because it is becoming the reality, we want to focus more so on making sure parents understand, what is this drug? What does this drug do to a person? Should I be concerned? Is my child going to be exposed to this drug? Is this drug going to be sold near my child's school district. These are the things that we focus on. Rather than fight the reality of it, we're going to try to aid the support for the parent and hopefully the child as well in educating them and providing information for them at no cost, because that's pretty much our mission statement. That's what we've been doing thus far. Just to piggyback off of what Officer Lewis had said earlier, we were talking about overdoses in the county.
Yeah.
I used to work very closely with the Sheriff's Coroner's Department, and I spoke with them this week on hard numbers about compiling an overdose number, what we've been seeing. Prior to 2012, we weren't really tracking in San Luis Obispo County what the death rate was
from
overdosing or drug-related deaths.
It wasn't extracted as overdose.
Correct.
Right.
For 2014, we have had 30 overdoses. In 2015, we had 60.
So it went
in
up.
1 year, 30. And mind you, it's not just one specific drug. It's multi or poly use of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, mind you, this is only the first 9 months, we had 34. So we haven't finished coding the rest of that. And that's the SLO County Health Department, to include the Sheriff's Coroner's Department, that have been compiling that information specifically for understanding where we're going with the death toll of drug-related overdoses, whether it's one drug or multi-drugs. And mm-hmm. very rarely do they see a singular drug as an overdose. So it's not just youth that are using marijuana or oxycodone or OxyContin. It's multi-use. And that's kind of the thing that we're seeing in our county, that people aren't really recognizing, maybe not wanting to recognize or not wanting to admit that there is an issue. And our main focus is to kind of put it in your face and make sure you know, hey, this is happening right here in your neighborhood. I mean, one of those overdoses that happened this week that we spoke of earlier happened right around the corner from my home. And I run past that house every day. So to think that that's happening right by in my neighborhood is shocking. But you can't pretend it's not really happening.
And what Leo's numbers don't reveal is that those are just the people that ended up at the coroner's office from an overdose. There are many more responses by our medics, our fire departments that are able to save people. There's the people that are suffering with the affliction that it's destroying lives and families. There are all of those too. So while we focus in on the deaths because it's the low point of, you know, that's the worst
the
thing
finality.
That can happen, the finality
yes.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that is occurring beneath the surface that is that goes unnoticed sometimes, and that you can't ever draw a statistic from.
Mm-hmm.
That's every bit as impactful.
You obviously are all talking about emergency room visits, and just that is increasing.
Very much so.
Yeah, and this nationally it's increasing, but in this county increasing as well. Not unusual to have multiple overdoses that emergency rooms are treating and responding to.
Well, it's so bad to the point that there's been talk about legislation to equip police officers in your car to carry Narcan, which is a drug that will, if we come across somebody that's potentially overdosed on heroin or an opioid, we can administer that on the scene and it will block the effects and hopefully save the person's life. So you know, that kind of gives you some perspective. You compare that to some of the discussions over AEDs and heart disease, and you know, it's on that same level now. It is a
yeah.
huge, major problem
yeah.
That's facing not just our community in our county, but nationwide.
Is that something that's being discussed in our county?
Yes, it definitely is on a number of levels. As you can imagine, the training that has to go into that those kind of things is something that we've been discussing as, you know, this legislation has been proposed and discussed and talked about. And our primary purpose as, you know, law enforcement is to help save lives. That's, you know, our code of ethics. That's one of the top things. So we're definitely supportive of anything that we can do. However, we're just concerned that we want to make sure that we know what we're doing, and we don't want
right.
to bring harm to somebody unintentionally.
Sure. And however, on the flip side, when you've got a situation where doing nothing is going to result in death, doing something is better than nothing, right?
And it's absolutely. Yeah. It's just as impactful for the officers or the paramedics that are on scene to know that somebody, you know, died while they were receiving care. Yeah. Like Donna and Leo said, it's so impactful, so far-reaching that you're hard-pressed to find somebody or know somebody that hasn't had this mm-hmm. impact them in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. It's you were living in a rock somewhere, under a rock, if that's the case, because it just doesn't happen.
Do you think that with the effort that has been happening from your perspective as a police officer, is an impact starting to show? Can you see that there's some increased awareness by parents locally and an increase in belief that they need to be aware?
Well, I don't know about belief. That one mm-hmm. I'll leave to Donna. Maybe she can or Leo can expand on that. But the awareness aspect of it, absolutely.
Good.
I think that, you know, at every turn, and I might be hyper aware of it because of my line of work.
I would hope.
But we really try and stay connected and support any effort that, you know, that puts out there any type of prevention, education, awareness. Mm-hmm. We're behind that as often as much as we can be. I do think it's, you know, become more in the limelight as these numbers increase. And the more people that are victimized, I think that it's going to – how it ends up and where we go and how we turn that corner is yet to be defined. But we're certainly working hard to get there.
Well, thank you.
Go
ahead, Donna.
I was just going to mention that as far as the awareness and stuff, I think with parents and stuff, it's still a very difficult thing. Mm-hmm. Most of them still – want to think it could never be their child. I think as a community, I think that SLO County is kind of coming around. We have the opioid coalition here now that started in San Luis. And there is a lot of stuff that's happening as far as trying to get to the doctors that are over prescribers,
right.
Trying to get the Narcan out there in different capacities, whether it be the needle exchange places, whether it be the police, because it is that bad that these things need to be on hand for parents, friends, actual users themselves will be carrying those kinds of things because it's gotten that bad. But I think that as a county, we are coming around to understanding that this is a huge, huge epidemic, and it is taking a lot of lives, and it's something that I'm really proud that our county is really doing something about that.
Great, great. If you just joined us, you're listening to KCBX, your public radio station at 90.1 FM, San Luis Obispo, 91.7 FM, Salinas to Paso Robles, 89.5 FM, Santa Barbara, and streaming at kcbx.org. Prescription pill and heroin addiction is on the rise, not just in other parts of the country, but here in our communities. Our show today addresses that topic. My guests for the second half of our hour include Donna Kelly, founder and director of the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation, Field Gibson, who is the president of the Paso Robles School Board, and Anna Murray, clinic manager for Aegis Treatment Center. Our show today is live, and you can bring your comments and questions into our discussion on air by calling at 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. And thank you, Donna and Phil, for joining me.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And Anna and Donna and Field, actually. So I'm going to start with you, Field. And Paso Robles School District has been very supportive of Donna's efforts. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, back before we had the Great Recession, our school district, like most school districts, had a student resource center that provided both the students and parents with a variety of social and emotional type resources for students and parents that needed those type services. And we, like most people, when we had a drastic budget cuts, that went by the wayside. And it was a passion of mine and another school board member, Joan Summers, to try and resurrect that. So we had a variety of meetings and conversations with people in the community about how can we get our Student Resource Center back on our campuses and serving our students. And we met Donna, and our basic conversation was she already has this going. Why don't we just, you know, ride the horse that's already
why saddle your own pony? Yeah. Huh?
Why come up? Why try to recreate something from scratch when she already has this going? So she invited a couple of us onto the board, along with Paul Press, who's our student services director. And they're very much, Caleb Peach is very much a very important partnership now with the Paso Robles School District.
And Donna, you started reaching out and looking for areas in the country that were addressing this issue creatively and bringing them into schools and working collaboratively with the community, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And what did you find?
Well, we've come up with so far a couple of really great, a few great things that we've been doing. One of the things that actually Leo started with us is our town halls that we've been providing free of charge. The Park Cinemas down in Paso has been gracious enough to let us use their facilities free of cost. We provide a screening of some kind of a prevention film for parents, community members, youth to come in and view the film. And then we've had great speakers afterwards kind of somewhat about what the film is about. We've had the local PD. We've had ER doctors, ER nurses. We've had the directors of the films, quite a few different things, which has been very big. We also then brought in the Reality Tour, which is another program that was put together, very impactful. The kids have to attend with a parent, and it's the walk through the life of a drug addict. It's very emotional. It's pretty much as if you're living this kind of a life.
What does that look like?
Well, it basically kind of has some scenes. It's not done on a stage or anything, but you're there in the room with these things that are happening. You've seen an arrest. You watch a booking of a youth, and then you come walk into some kind of a drug overdose where that person does not survive, and then you move on into their funeral. And so it's been very emotional. I mean, we've seen parents grown, you know, dads there crying. They get to sit in the room and talk to a recovering addict, which Aegis has provided, and come in. And then we've also brought in our county sheriff's department, our district attorney's office to come in and just talk about what's actually happening and going on in our local community. And so that's been great. We've had the local mortuary, the slow ambulance, the Paso Robles Fire Department. Everybody is so on board and wants to participate with us every year, which has been just phenomenal. The other program that we're getting ready to actually put on here again in a couple weeks in February is the Real Simulation, and that's a program that my husband and I went back to Missouri to get and train on. We have invited other school districts in this county to come and observe. We're hoping to really spread this program. It's kind of a good choices, bad choices program where the kids walk through a scenario of what their life would be like if they don't graduate high school. They may have kids. They may be an ex-offender, so they wear a button around with that. Some may have some kind of a job, whether it be mowing lawns or, you know, working at Taco Bell. Some don't. They have to go and apply for a job. They have to get their kids to child care. They forget them. They get arrested. They got to go to social services and get them out of there. They don't make their rent on time. They get evicted. Their chair's turned upside down. Then they're arrested for loitering. Then they get to relive that in a better choice. They have graduated high school. They've moved on to higher education, or they've got a great job. They may have kids, but now they can afford them. And they get to see the difference. Mm-hmm. And the physical feeling of the difference of how it is when you make some really poor choices. We're really trying to hit eighth grade with that, being mm-hmm. that they're going into high school the next year, to really think about those choices that they could be making coming up in the near future. So that's been a really, really popular and great program we're hoping to also expand on as well.
I can see why you wouldn't want to saddle your own horse.
Well, we have the school district has partnered with Kaylee Peach, and along with that, these programs, and helped develop those programs and get the word out. And obviously, the students that are participating at this point are the students of the Paso Robles School District. And along with that, then Kaylee Peach and our Student Services Department have brainstormed about other activities that we could do on top of that, such as the Paso Robles School District rolled out this last year a free drug test program that is completely confidential. And it's available to the parents, where the parents can sign up their kids for this for a random drug test. The results do not come to the school district. It does not affect them academically or their extracurricular activities, such as athletics. It is merely something to inform the parent and give the students a chance to say no. So it's a double screen drug test. I mean, it's tested twice to make sure that it's not a false positive. And we pay for it. Paso Robles School District pays for it.
So there's no cost to the parent?
There is no cost for the parent. It's literally the main reason that we came up with and talking at our Kaylee Peach meetings and along with the school officials was that we wanted to give the kids a reason or an excuse to say no, but then give one more tool or resource to the parents so that they would be notified.
How many have actually taken advantage of this so far?
Wow, it's grown. Last year, when it first came out and was piloted, I'm not sure of exact numbers, but I want to say that I don't even know how many.
I can't give you a specific
hundreds
number
now that we probably have on that are being tested. And, you know, we really try to reiterate to the parents, this is to help your kids be able to say no when they have that peer pressure. And none of the results come to the school whatsoever. But there is a resource list provided with that. If there is a positive test that is sent to the parent along with the positive test to help them find their own resources. But if they do choose to come to the district for any kind of help, there's no ramification in any kind of academics or sports or anything. We want to help the kids. They want to help the kids, and that's what the main goal.
Fantastic. And how does the school district choose the students that are going to participate in some of the programs that you've talked about? Is it open to everybody? Is it certain grades? How do you select?
Depending on what the program is, yes, it's targeted towards certain grades, but it's not a matter of the school district identifying students that we think might or might not be interested. It's pretty much opened up to every student, especially our town hall meetings. Our function as a school district is to help publicize and get the word out. The information is disseminated to all the schools or the students that are appropriate for whatever program that would be.
And do the parents need to give parental consent in order for the students to participate in these?
It kind of varies on the program. Mm-hmm. The reality tour is something they have to attend with the child, so they have to come along with that. It's done outside of school time. The real simulation is something that some of the groups can opt out of, some can sign up for, and so we really try to get the word out there. We hit demographics of different ages and stuff in certain things depending on what the program provides. So it's, you know, if they want to choose to have their child participate, then they can sign them up for that.
Okay, I'm going to get to a couple of callers that have been really patient here. Lindsay, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
Kind of both. This is something you may have discussed earlier. I came in a little late to the conversation, but the proliferation of the medication sort of surprises me. I have a friend who unfortunately fell at work some months ago, broke a couple of ribs, and when she was leaving the hospital, they said, would you like some oxycodone? And she said, no, I don't think I'll need it. Maybe not really, maybe one or two. And they gave her a bottle of 25.
Wow.
Which she never used. And I think that happened again where she's diabetic and had to go to the hospital. She had valley fever. And they kind of automatically forced her up another bottle of 25. So that just sits there. She's never going to take it. But I just wondered about the pharmaceutical companies and their prescription methods when she would have said one, two, maybe is fine. And, you know, is there any push to kind of change?
We're going to...
pharmaceutical companies seem to hand this stuff out like candy.
Yeah, it's a great question, Lindsay, and that's a great segue over to Anna. Mm-hmm.
Hello. So I, as well as Donna, are a part of the Slow Opioid Safety Coalition, and one thing that our county is trying to do is get more safe prescribers in our hospitals. We are seeing large trends of, you know, large amounts of prescription opiates being prescribed, and oftentimes they're not needed, and there's no education to the patient or the parent of the child. These medications have the potential for abuse, especially if the patient has that genetic component. You know, they're not asking, do you have an alcoholic or addict in your family? If so, you're that more likely to, you know, have the chance for abuse.
Yeah, and then looking at the number of pills that they do prescribe, mm-hmm. when they do prescribe. And Anna, can you talk a little bit? There was a mention earlier, I think, by Donna about the issues that started with oxycodone. And with oxycodone, there was so much pressure from the pharmaceutical reps mm-hmm. for that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we are actually not seeing as much oxycodone in the area. There was a I want to say I've been with Aegis Treatment Centers for 6 years, and in the first couple of years, we saw a lot of oxycodone. The oxycodone prescriptions were rampant in this area, and then people were getting kicked off their pain management programs. Their doctors weren't prescribing them anymore, and they started buying them on the streets, and those medications
very
are
expensively.
Very expensive on mm-hmm. the streets, and that's why we're seeing increased numbers in our county for black tar heroin. Yeah. As they become dependent, start cheap. Abusing them, and the black tar heroin is cheap.
Much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take a call real quick from Deborah. Deborah, are you there?
I am here, and this segues very nicely into what your guests are talking about right now. I wanted to recommend a book, which they're probably already familiar with. It's written by Anna Lemke. She's the chief medical doctor for the for addiction medicine at Stanford University, and she addresses how the oxycodone epidemic and how 3 out of 4 people addicted to heroin probably started with a prescription drug. The name of the book is called Drug Dealer MD, mm-hmm. How Doctors Were Duped, Patients Got Hooked, and Why It's So Hard to Stop. And it's really a great read. They give a lot of personal stories. And it's kind of an eye-opener for, I would recommend it to people that have kids, because some of these kids started by having a sports injury, and then they were prescribed an opiate of some sort and got that euphoric high that clicked with them. Doesn't always click with every kid, but it clicked with them, and then they began chasing that high over and over again. So I wanted to recommend that book as a read. Her name is Anna Lemke, L-E-M-B-K-E. And I also want to ask a question. Addicts and drug abusers are very good. I used to be a drug counselor. They're very good at hiding the fact that they're abusing drugs. And there are some telltale signs over prolonged use, which, of course, their grades drop and they become antisocial and things of that nature. But I think it's not that obvious. And I would like your guests, if they could, address how parents can troubleshoot it where the signs aren't so obvious.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. Good segue back to Anna here.
Mm-hmm. If you're concerned that your child is using drugs, they sell drug tests at every pharmacy. You know, and luckily, the PASO students, they get to participate in that testing program. I recommend talking to your kids, asking them. If you feel like they're lying to you, you can test your child. You should. Also, I recommend Al-Anon to any of the parents in this area that have a child who is using drugs. Get support.
Donna, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's kind of some of the stuff that we're trying to address is helping parents to be more educated in all of this and know some of the signs. Some of our guest speakers have been addicts, local addicts that have gone through the school districts here who come and tell their story and tell how they duked it through their parents and stuff. So parents can become more aware of that. Some of our guest speakers trying to bring more education and really trying to help the parents be able to diagnose these things a lot earlier.
Yes, and I also recommend get your kids proper treatment, get them counseling. They need help.
Now, you had mentioned that there's a lack of treatment facilities locally. You do have AEGIS here. Can you talk a little bit about what AEGIS
is? Yeah, so AEGIS Treatment Centers, we are an outpatient medication-assisted treatment program. We have 30 facilities in California. Ours, the one that I manage, is in Atascadero. Our sister clinic is in Santa Maria, and we do a combination of medication and counseling. When you combine the two, that is the most effective form of treatment for opioid use disorder. The medications we treat with are buprenorphine, more commonly known as Suboxone, and methadone. These are opioid agonists. Patients who are taking these are not getting high. They stop their cravings, they stop their withdrawals, and they block the effects of the opiates like heroin, oxycodone, dilaudid, morphine. So if they were to try and take one of these opiate medications while on methadone or buprenorphine, it blocks the effects. They won't feel it. And they feel normal on these medications. And we really have to combat the stigma to medication-assisted treatment. People, I hear it all the time, aren't they getting high when they're coming to your program? They're just replacing one drug for another. Yes, these are opiates, but they are used in a different way. They are blockers. They're taken once a day. They're not getting any euphoria from them, and they're very safe when they're prescribed by a doctor in a treatment program.
Is the purpose of the AEGIS program to detox eventually off of the methadone or the Suboxone?
We have detox program and we have maintenance programs. The ultimate goal is to taper our patients off the program. But I can say I've been doing this for 6 years and it's individualized. I have patients that had used IV heroin for 20 years, and I honestly don't know if they would live if they weren't on one of these medications. Some patients are able to, and we've had a lot of success where with a slow taper, they don't feel any withdrawal and they're able to get completely off the medication and they continue, you know, recovery outside of our program and stay clean and sober. But like Dr. Holwalt, my physician, always says, is you can't turn a pickle back into a cucumber. So once someone who has the genes for addiction uses and goes down this path, they're always going to need treatment in their life. And it's, if you know, hopefully they won't always need medication, but they need to continue treatment, whether it be at a church like the caller we had earlier.
Now, sometimes churches is an outreach for people. I mean, there are different things that are accessible. Mm-hmm. What about accessible for people that don't have the wherewithal to pay for treatment?
Well, I'm not an expert in this area. I absolutely would defer to Anna, but I know that Pastorville School District, for example, has a variety of other partnerships like with Lifestyle Recovery and mm-hmm. some other groups. And again, we use Kayla Peach as a clearinghouse. We brought Kayla Peach actually onto our high school campus and opened an office for the organization so that it's readily available to the high school students and the parents. And we're trying to build that program up so that is a community access. But I would suspect that there's a lot of different organizations like Lifestyle Recovery, other groups that are available out there that people could be using, a lot of different support groups that people could make avail themselves to. But, part of the message with the Kale Peach is literally to both educate people and let them know what is going on in our community, as well as provide the resources and develop the knowledge that people have that what resources are available.
And the partnerships with other programs such as AEGIS and Lifestyles and stuff, partnering with them, and so we can get the word out there to those that need it, because coming from a parent who didn't have any idea where to start with this whole thing, that's a big thing for our parents, is when they do suspect that, where do I go? Where do I start? Uh-huh. Who do I talk to?
When somebody reaches out to you, yes. a parent calls you and says, uh-huh. I don't know what to do.
Oh, I go over the full program like I would if they were the patient. I invite them in, and we try to do an intervention with the parent and the child. Adult. We only treat 18 and older.
Okay.
But we like to bring the family in as much as possible. But once the patient admits, it's up to them if they want to do a release of information and include the parent. But to speak to your last question, a lot of the programs in this area accept insurances. Our mm-hmm. program, I can let all the listeners listeners know, we take Medi-Cal. Mm-hmm. We take private insurances such as Blue Shield, Blue Cross. We also take United. I don't know about the other programs, but there's options. There's County Drug and Alcohol. They have a buprenorphine program. There's Central Coast Freedom Center. They provide counseling.
And they also have a youth program that they are doing as well right now.
For where?
Central Coast Freedom Center. They have a youth program.
Uh-huh. So for kids, there are resources for kids.
Yeah, there are a few
well.
That are slowly becoming more and more available, because before we really had nothing.
And that's fairly recent. We have about 3 minutes left. I want to make sure that we cover those things that are really important. You have something coming up.
Well, one of the things we're to date kind of still to be determined, but we have a big color fun run that we put on every year. That is our big fundraiser, how we kind of fund all of these programs and things that we're bringing out to the community. And as well, something dear to my heart I think is really important is we provide a health fair there as well. We try to invite all kinds of community organizations to come out there, get the word out to people about their programs. Anything from Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We have all kinds of treatment facilities. We have just businesses, anything like that, that try to get the information out to people about their programs so that people become more aware of what's really out in our community that they have no idea. So people can go on our website, the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation.org, to get information, to read about the story, always to become a sponsor for our event or any of this stuff that we're going on. We are 100% volunteer based. And so it's a lot of work, but I think we're getting it out there.
Okay. Thank you. And Field.
I'd just like to reiterate the first part of the segment of the show is that this is something that affects all socioeconomic classes, all ethnicities, and it's not just our city or our county. I heard just this morning they were talking about some Pennsylvania, and they were giving a statistic that said that the opioid accidental deaths is exceeded the deaths by automobile accident. It was the number one cause of accidental death. So it is a nationwide epidemic, and people do need to be aware of that, and that's part of the message we're trying to get out today.
Anna.
I just wanted to thank you for having us on here. I'm hoping that a lot of people in this county are listening. This is a great foundation that Donna started. The more awareness we can raise in our community, the better. We need to increase access to treatment, and we need to get naloxone in the hands of more people. If you have a family member or friend that is actively using, go and get naloxone, like Donna referenced, at the Needle Exchange.
We have a moment, so go ahead and...
Naloxone is also known as Narcan. It now comes in a nasal spray.
Okay.
So if you have that on you and say your aunt or uncle who is abusing opiate medications, you feel like they're non-responsive, instead of having to wait for paramedics to get there, you can administer that. We want it in the hands of anyone who's in their addiction, because they might be able to use it themselves before it's too late.
Okay, and your phone number?
Our number is 805-461-5212. That's the Atascadero Aegis Treatment Centers. And our website is www.aegistreatmentcenters.com. That's AEGIS.
Thank you. I want to thank my guests today, Donna Kelly, with the founder and director of the Kayla Peach Memorial Foundation, Leo Castillo, co-director and military representative, Ty Lewis, police officer for Paso Robles PD, Phil Gibson, Paso Robles School Board member and the president of the school board, and Anna Murray, clinic manager for Aegis Treatment Center. Next week, join host Fred Monroe as he has members of the NAACP that's being formed locally. And you have been listening to Central Coast Voices. I'm Chris Kington. We'll see you next week.